Welcome to Storytime by Chava. We are continuing the book Once Upon a Journey, Volume 2 by Rabbi Zalman Ruderman, and we are up to Chapter 89, Suffering for a Mitzvah. The Paritz glared at Gershon with narrowed eyes. "There is no connection between this payment and your son," he growled. "You owed this money for a long time, far too long. I don't need to thank you for finally beginning to do what you should have done long ago. As for that son of yours, well, from the minute I handed him over to the priest, he belonged to the priest. You need to talk to the priest about your son, not me." Gershon could not believe what he had heard. If this nightmare continued a moment longer, he felt his heart would explode. How is it possible for a human to be so evil and cruel, he wondered to himself. He began to wail and cry loudly, creating a commotion in the home of the Paritz. Though not for long, the Paritz's servants grabbed him and threw him out into the street, beating him mercilessly all the way. Meanwhile, Gershon's family had discovered that the priest had been harming David, who stubbornly refused to obey the priest's commands. The evil man tried to force David to eat non-kosher meat, but the brave boy refused with all his strength. As punishment, David was thrown into a filthy pigsty. Villagers passing the priest's home saw David being beaten and treated badly by the priest. They were shocked to hear their clergyman threaten the boy and to see his mean face as it looked now, twisted with rage and hatred. "You will see, you little insolent Jew," he yelled. "You will see what I will do to you. Whether you like it or not, you will become a proper Christian in the end." Kerpel was not ready to leave Gershon until he had rescued him and his family from all of their problems. He was determined to complete the great mitzvah he had begun with such self-sacrifice. He went with Gershon to visit the Paritz's son, the good-hearted manager of his father's estates. Gershon was so pained by his son's suffering that he could barely say a word, so Kerpel spoke for him. Kerpel explained that they had repaid the debt and interest to the Paritz. He then informed the Paritz's son of David's abuse and captivity. "What right does the priest have to continue holding the boy, even though the debt has been paid down to the very last penny?" he demanded. "He is kidnapping a young child from his parents' home and forcing him to change his religion through beating and suffering. How can such a crime be allowed to continue?" The Paritz's son did not need much convincing. He felt truly sorry for his good friend Gershon and his unfortunate son. In a bold move, they decided that Kerpel and Gershon would go around the village informing people of the priest's actions. At the same time, the Paritz's son would try his best to convince his cruel father to end David's unfair treatment and captivity. Their plan worked. The villagers were shocked to learn that the priest had stolen a child from his parents and was beating him, yelling at him, and had even thrown him into a pigsty. Surely that was not the way a priest was meant to act towards a young boy, they told each other. How wrong and embarrassing for their religion. The Paritz was worried about the people's anger, and he warned the priest that keeping the boy might cause more trouble than it was worth. In the end, the priest gave in to the pressure and sent David home. Gershon, his wife, and their children welcomed David with delight. They could not stop praising Hashem for their salvation. However, they noticed that David was not in good shape. He had spent a few weeks in the home of the priest and had been beaten and hurt every day. His body was covered with bruises and wounds, and he was terribly shaken by the suffering he had endured. They decided that he should spend some time in a different location, away from the places that filled his mind with memories of his ordeal. Once again, Kerpel came to the rescue. He offered to bring David back to Sharya with him and to care for him there. Gershon and his wife were amazed at Kerpel's endless kindness, and they thanked him with all their hearts. Kerpel took David to Sharya, where he and his wife Bracha cared for him as if he were their own son, providing him with love and with the best of everything. Slowly, he recovered and regained his full strength. A while later, Kerpel convinced Gershon and his wife to allow him to send David to learn Torah at the yeshiva of Barisov. Kerpel had succeeded in his mitzvah. He had rescued his fellow Jews. However, he now paid a heavy price. Having given all of his money to repay Gershon's debt, he had almost nothing left for himself. He could not even borrow money from his friends because he had already borrowed huge sums to accomplish the rescue of Gershon and his family. Kerpel's debts grew larger and larger until his business completely collapsed. He was now so poor that he desperately needed help himself. Despite these troubles, Kerpel and Bracha never regretted what they had done. They were grateful to have had the wonderful merit of rescuing a Jewish soul from conversion and of saving an entire family from a terrible fate. Kerpel and his wife did not tell their neighbors and friends about their noble deed. They did not want to damage their precious mitzvah by having it publicized. Whatever they had done, they told each other, was only for the sake of Hashem, not to receive a reward, nor to receive praise. Adding to his troubles, Kerpel contracted an unusual illness. Doctors were called to his bedside, but were unable to discover the cause of his illness, nor could they offer any cure. Kerpel's health went from bad to worse. It seemed certain that his life was about to end. The good Jews of Sharia gathered before the open Aron Kodesh and cried bitterly to Hashem, the true healer, to send a cure to their beloved Kerpel. In order to draw down Hashem's blessing, they gave Kerpel an additional name, Chaim. As these events were unfolding, unfamiliar guests arrived in Sharia. These men were Nestarim, followers of Rav Adam Bal Shem. Sharia had been selected as a center for all the Nestarim who carried out assignments in that region. It was now a place where they would gather for meetings. The hidden tzaddikim never asked anyone for help. They received the money they needed to live and fulfill their secret missions from a special fund that was run by their leader, the great tzaddik, Rav Adam Bal Shem. During the time when Rav Adam Bal Shem was leader of the Nestarim, a young man joined the group. His name was Rabbi Yisrael. His father's name was Rabbi Eliezer, and he came from a place called Ukup. Rabbi Yisrael offered many suggestions to the Baal Shem, and Rav Adam always accepted them, instructing one or more of his close followers to follow Rabbi Yisrael's plans. Rabbi Yisrael wanted the Nestarim to have a positive influence on as many Jews as possible. One of his ideas was to assign each hidden tzaddik to a specific location. There, he would work nonstop, helping, teaching, and inspiring the Jews. Until that time, most Nestarim would wander from town to village, helping and influencing whoever they met along the way. Now, according to Rabbi Yisrael's plan, each Nestar would have a fixed place and mission. In a place where there was no malama to teach the children Torah, for example, a Nestar would be sent and assigned to open a cheder. Where there was no one to give shiurim to adults, a Nestar would be sent as a magid shir. One of the Nestarim who turned up in Sharia was a man named Reb Kahus. He met with Hirsch, who was also a Nestar. He had something important to tell Hirsch. "I have a special message for you from Rabbi Yisrael of Ukup," he explained. Hirsch trembled with excitement and respect. It was not every day that one received a special message from the holy Rabbi Yisrael. He prepared himself to hear the words of the great tzaddik, the leading student of their Rebbe, the Baal Shem.